You're listening to the Ref Recap Podcast on 960theref.com. Here are your hosts, Sam Franco and Ryan Goldstein.
All right, welcome back into another exciting edition of the Ref Recap Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco and Ryan Goldstein along with you. We appreciate everyone that listens to the Ref Recap Podcast right here, and we've got a lot to get to today. We'll talk some Georgia football, we'll talk some Georgia basketball, and we'll talk a little bit of Braves baseball. So plenty to get to on this edition of the podcast. And as always, like I said earlier, I'm joined by Ryan Goldstein. Ryan, what's been going on with you, man?
Yeah, I've been good, Sam. It's good to be back with you as always. Nice to check in weekly. It's weird now that we're kind of in the transition from football season and we're kind of in the getting into the March Madness and the craziness that is basketball and then baseball starting up. You kind of think that this is a slow time, but then you realize how exciting it is for sports because basketball is getting to the point where everything gets really exciting with conference tournaments ahead of us. And then baseball, like I said, is just getting started with Georgia baseball started, I guess, now 2 weeks ago. And then the Braves are starting in about a month. So, you know, and you'll have the opening of SunTrust Park. So it's kind of exciting, an exciting time, even though we're without football now.
That's right. But we're really never without football, as we're going to start off with some Georgia football talk here, and on a sour note with some injuries and things like that. We'll start off with the Trenton Thompson story, and obviously that was a weird one. You and I talked about that a good bit when you filled in for Dave last Friday on the morning show, and it's just an unfortunate circumstance, really, and just some stuff brought to light maybe that either UGA didn't want coming out, or that obviously doesn't paint UGA or paint Trenton Thompson in a necessarily positive light, even if it's some things that were just bad medication reactions. You know, people in these kind of situations tend to assume the worst.
Yeah, well, I think it's there's a couple of points that need to be made. He wasn't arrested, right? So it's not as if he's in any legal trouble. But to your point, it is an odd situation where you see somebody who, especially in the conversation of football, is such an impact player on the defensive line and a player that, you know, fans look to have a really big year as a junior. So there's so many question marks as we head into spring ball with him. First and foremost, you want to make sure that he's healthy. He's obviously won't be there for spring ball, and he has withdrawn from classes for the semester. So it's one of those things where you're just kind of hoping he makes it back for fall camp and is ready for opening day when they take on App State, but it leaves a hole. But going shifting from a, you know, the Trenton Thompson situation to what it means on the field, I think it almost provides an opportunity, which I think when it comes at the time in spring ball is a great thing for young players like a Julian Rochester or even an older guy like Daquan Hopkins-Muckle, who, you know, was injured some last year and then gives him some more reps where if for some reason Trenton Thompson isn't there when fall camp starts, you have options, right? You don't feel like you're having a shorthanded deck and going, oh my God, how do we game plan for the first game? We just realized we don't have our best player on the defensive line.
Exactly, and there are a lot of questions going into spring about this team, and Roquan Smith being hurt with that pectoral injury, obviously one that it doesn't seem like it's going to be a long-term injury or anything. And quite frankly, something like that you can look at as a positive because some of the players that might have been behind him will get a little more time and get some time to see the field, and Georgia's coaches can maybe evaluate them even further.
Exactly. So I think it's an opportunity. And when players like a Trent Thompson and Roquan Smith aren't available, you know what you're going to get out of them. So it's not as if you're looking, this is somebody who, like a Mecole Hardman, who we feel like can emerge this coming season as a sophomore, getting hurt to where he won't be getting those reps and you feel like you're probably setting him back a good bit. These are players who you know what you're going to get out of them. You feel like the production is there when they're healthy. So giving guys opportunities to step up. And look, maybe some of these freshmen come in and make hay, whether it's a Nate McBride at linebacker. So they're different players that have opportunities, which I think is great for a young football team. And it also goes to show you who's hungry, who wants to be out there, who wants to be making plays, because that's kind of one of those things where you get to the middle of the season, and whether it's injuries or just attrition and other ways, you like to see who is prepared to step up when they need it. And this opportunity, I think, in spring could be great for the team.
Absolutely. And there's going to be plenty of position battles, just like there are every year. but the one that everybody's going to focus on and one that everybody, I think, is just assuming that it's going to be a competition just because that's what Kirby Smart has kind of said over the years, and not just over the years, but at his time at Georgia, where, look, we're going to have competitions at all times for positions. Nobody's starting position is necessarily safe, nor should it be. I mean, if there's another guy that can come in and Georgia thinks might have a chance to give the team a better chance to win, then that person should be playing. And, of course, I'm talking about the quarterback battle with Jake Fromm and Jacob Eason. Look, Eason had a good freshman season, but certainly had his ups and downs. And he seems to be a player that might not be the most accurate passer, but certainly has the cannon arm that can get the ball down the field.
Well, I think in terms of the quarterback situation, Georgia's in a great spot. You have two stud quarterbacks, both five stars coming out of high school. And you look at it, if Eason can keep the job, then that means that the 12, 13 games he played last year were enough to give him the starting job, and you feel comfortable with him under having another year under his belt and being the signal caller as a sophomore. Or if Jake Fromm somehow unseats him, you feel, wow, this kid must be really, really legit. The fact that he can come in and beat out a sophomore who started, you know, full season as a freshman, more or less. So I think either way, when you feel like we get to the first week in September, the first Saturday in September, you feel pretty good about where you're at, because you either have a freshman who you feel really, really good about because he could beat out somebody ahead of him, or you feel good about a sophomore that's coming back, and you hope that from year one to year two he takes a pretty big leap with some good pieces around him where you feel like they're all growing together.
Absolutely, and I think that when you're looking at a competition like that, when you have a guy that has started, it's always the most popular guy on campus is always the backup quarterback, as they say, and I know that Eason definitely struggled at times, but he also had some very good moments. And I think that with this team and this team going into year two under Kirby Smart, there is going to be pressure on Jacob Eason to get better from what he was doing this past season. And certainly having a guy like Jake Fromm kind of nipping at his heels, you would think, can only help, because either it's going to make Jacob Eason play better, or Jake Fromm's going to prove that he might be the better guy and that he'll come in and get playing time.
Yeah, I think competition is huge. And you mentioned that when we started talking about the quarterbacks. You need to have competition because, look, and I think the area that probably helps the most is special teams. Because you look at Alabama, and there's so many players that they have coming in, and they're all five stars, right? I mean, Jonathan Allen even wrote in a Players Tribune letter leaving how, you know, everybody's a five-star at Alabama, pretty much. So that doesn't mean anything once you get on campus. And you want to get to the point at Georgia where everybody's a five-star, and the only way you're going to get onto the field as a freshman is by playing on special teams. And you want it to be a privilege and an honor to play on special teams, not something where we're having to kind of put position players on special teams where they're either taking away time from working on their craft as a wide receiver or defensive back or whatever it may be. So you want it to be where there's a lot of freshmen coming in and they say, look, the only way I'm going to get onto this field is I'm going to have to work my butt off as a gunner, or I'm going to have to work my butt off, you know, protecting on special teams to the point where that's how they get noticed and that's how they get spots at linebacker, cornerback, running back, wherever it may be. So I think that's where the competition starts, and you hope that that area is shored up because, like you said, hopefully in year two under Kirby Smart, the team improves overall. The one area that I look for, as much as, you know, anything besides offense and defense, I hope the special teams is to a point where you don't feel like there's a lot of negative plays, and maybe even in some games there are positive plays, but you have to cut out those negative plays and that phase of the game.
Yeah, and it's very interesting, too, how some of the stuff has gone down this offseason with the kicking game and things like that. Obviously, Rodrigo Blankenship wanted to get that scholarship, and then Georgia kind of changed up some things around as, you know, Rodrigo not going to get that scholarship, and then David Marvin from Wofford coming in and getting – and that one's kind of strange how that's going to work out, some sort of delayed scholarship. I think I even heard it called a blue shirt at some point, and that obviously is just another one of these terms that comes up with college football, and it says that I'm looking at an article now. It says blue shirts represent the newest loophole for FBS programs to accumulate depth while not affecting their annual numbers. Like gray shirt recruits, blue shirts are not blue shirts are counted towards the next season scholarships total, and this allows programs to get the best of both worlds. A blue shirt is able to enroll and participate in team events in the fall. So I don't necessarily know how all that works or whatever, but that is another kicker coming in to compete, and it's kind of been the theme of this episode of the Ref Recap podcast so far. It's competition, and competition should breed success, and if Rodrigo Blankenship does get, you know, boxed out of that kicking position, I think that unfortunately one person he might have to blame is his own father for kind of taking care of business in the wrong way and in a way that Kirby Smart definitely did not seem to appreciate.
Yeah, the whole situation was bizarre, and it was one of those things where Rodrigo did a really good job of being as diplomatic as possible between his head coach and his father, coming out and saying, you know, I understand where my father's coming from, but I also understand where Coach Smart is coming from, and I want to do my best to give everything I can to the University of Georgia, and I realize that I haven't gotten to that point yet. So I thought he handled the situation pretty gracefully for someone in college and for someone of his age and in the situation you're in, being pitted between your parent and your coach and trying to appease both of them. But you're right. The competition element is the one that's what people wanted at Georgia, right? I mean, that's why Kirby Smart was brought in. He was brought to recruit at a higher level than Mark Richt was doing, and he was brought to bring in players that were kind of – it was a no-nonsense. Look, the best players will play, and if you're not good enough to play, you're not good enough. It wasn't, you know, well, you're maybe a senior, so you deserve to play. It's if you're a freshman and you're a star, you're going to play. It's not if you've played here for 3 years and you've given a lot. Not that I don't care, but that role is not yours just because you've waited for it. And granted, last year the season didn't end like many would hope, in the sense that it was an 8-5 year and some bad losses at home. But everything that we've seen thus far in the offseason leads you to feel really optimistic about the future of the program and where it could go under Kirby Smart, especially because the recruiting has been ramped up, where Georgia's had one of its best recruiting classes, at least its best recruiting class probably in the 21st century. And you just feel like the talent level is getting better and better, and you're hearing about more competition, like you mentioned, with, you know, the kicking situation at quarterback, where no position is just given to somebody. Everybody, every position is earned.
Absolutely. So we'll continue to hit more previews of spring and things like that as we roll on here, as we are recording this edition of the Ref Recap podcast on March 1st. And we'll transition to basketball, where, disclaimer time, the Georgia basketball team is taking on Auburn tonight. It'll be senior night, so we won't really preview that game, just because, you know, by the time you listen to it when we publish this tomorrow, the game will have been decided already. But I did want to talk about, with senior night being tonight, J.J. Frazier, who has meant so much to the Georgia basketball program. He's your current SEC Player of the Week based on the performances he's had against Alabama and LSU, scoring 28 and 29 points respectively in those games. He also dropped, I believe, 36 against Kentucky in a very, very close game at the Stegman Coliseum about a week and a half ago. And unfortunately for Georgia, this has really just been a season where they've had some very close calls but haven't been able to win some of these games. You know, you take Florida to overtime, you take Kentucky to overtime in Lexington, and they just haven't had those games go their way. But even with all that, right now Joe Lunardi has Georgia as one of the first four out, so they're right there on the bubble for the NCAA tournament. And in large part, that's due to J.J. Frazier, who has really been the heart and soul of Georgia basketball for what seems like the better part of the last 3 years.
J.J. Frazier has been phenomenal. It's one of those things, every time you watch him, you think, well, he's probably a little too small. You know, he probably can't get the job done. And every time you say that, he writes you wrong and he finds a way to get the job done. It's really just so impressive for somebody who, you know, a lot of people would have said, like, you're not going to be able to play at the next level. You just can't. Look at your frame. Look at your size. It's just not going to happen. And he continues to impress you week after week and game after game. Look, Saturday he had the flu, and then he ends up scoring, you know, the game-winning free throws to beat LSU, and single-handedly has kind of kept this season intact to the point where, like you mentioned, Joe Lunardi has Georgia on the last four out, where you feel like, wow, okay, this team still has a chance. Because a few weeks ago, you didn't feel like they had a pulse of making maybe any postseason tournament. And now you're talking about the NCAA tournament with two games remaining, like you said, Auburn tonight, and then they have Arkansas on Saturday. So you got to win these next two games, obviously. And then you got to hope that you can make a little bit of hay in the SEC tournament. And you almost hope that you get a shot at playing, you know, Florida in the semifinals or Kentucky, to where one of those teams, you have an opportunity to beat somebody who's on their way to the NCAA tournament and get a marquee win. And it's funny how you look at the schedule and think, there were so many close calls, the game that could really elevate you or help you is the Tech game. When you beat Tech, you would think, oh, man, this team is going to be terrible. And now Tech is on the verge of possibly making an NCAA tournament under their first-year head coach. So it's funny how teams that you feel like maybe weren't going to help you at all could end up the reason why you make it to the tournament down the road.
Absolutely. And for a guy to have come, you know, out of Glenville, Georgia, 5'10", little guy, I don't think anybody would have thought coming out that JJ would have turned into the player and had the impact on UGA that he's had. But he really has been a phenomenal player. He'll go down as one of Georgia's best. I don't know if he'll necessarily go down as one of the best players, but certainly as one of the most favorited players by many of the fans. In fact, at the Senior Day ceremony that, again, is tonight, that we're recording this on Wednesday, it'll drop tomorrow on Thursday. But I'm assuming that this will be one of the loudest ovations on a senior night we've ever had, just because of what he's meant to this program.
And he deserves it. And, you know, like you said, for the better part of a year and a half, he stepped into the role this year of being the lead guy, because last year there was Charles Mann and Kenny Gaines. But without Yonte Maiden, really since the Kentucky game, because he played a minute and a half in that game, J.J. Frazier has been the heart and soul of this team. And that's been the case all year, but you feel it even more now because you thought to yourself, well, maybe the season is just over when Yonte Maiden went out and they've won a couple in a row. So you feel good about your chances as you take on an Auburn team tonight that's not great, and then an Arkansas team on the road. If you can get a win there, you feel really good about where you are headed into the SEC tournament. And like I said, with the way J.J. Frazier has been playing, if he gets hot in the SEC tournament, you could make it to, you know, Sunday and be in the finals. You never know.
Absolutely. So Georgia basketball has definitely had an up-and-down season, but hopefully they can string together some wins here towards the end, led by J.J. Frazier, and possibly make the NCAA tournament. That's what the goal always should be at Georgia. I know that they haven't been a program that has historically consistently been to the NCAA tournament, but we've talked about this before. With the recruiting in the state of Georgia and the level of talent here, there's no reason why Georgia shouldn't be a team, not necessarily that makes a tournament every year, but certainly one that contends for it every year.
Yeah, it's a tough conversation to have, in the sense that if you look at currently what the resources are in this state, the amount of talent, you feel like it's a no-brainer, right? There's no way Georgia shouldn't be making the SEC, the NCAA tournament almost every year. But then you look at the history and you look at how many tournament appearances, and you say, well, this is probably on par for what this team should be. So you kind of feel conflicted, because do you go by what people have done prior, or do you feel like because of the situation you're in currently, that should dictate the expectations? And that's the tough part. And I think you see that Mark Fox, even without Yonte Maiden, has done a great job coaching this team and getting them some wins. But then you feel like, is it time for a new voice to maybe bring in some talent to Athens, where you feel like there's a wealth of talent in the state of Georgia that there's no reason why some of these players should be getting out of the state and not going to the university in the state and representing, you know, Georgia, to where you feel like they should be in an NCAA tournament, or at least in the conversation every year.
Absolutely. So Georgia basketball rolls on, and we'll hope that they can get that elusive NCAA tournament spot. We'll jump now to the Braves, as they got a win yesterday, again, recording on Wednesday, dropping on Thursday. But they got a win over the Cardinals in spring training, and they've gotten some wins here in spring training. And this is a team that obviously the expectations for them aren't necessarily super high, but I'm a person that thinks that this team on the high end could contend for a wild card. I mean, the pitching is really going to determine what this team does, just because you look at this offensive lineup, and I mean, Ender Inciarte, Dansby Swanson, Matt Kemp, Freddie Freeman, Adonis Garcia's even swung the bat very well in his time, and Nick Markakis is another guy who historically has been a good hitter. So I think this team offensively could be fine. The real question is kind of this patchwork pitching staff that's been put together of a bunch of veterans like Jaime Garcia, Bartolo Colon, R.A. Dickey. And then on the back end, you also have Mike Foltynewicz, and let's not forget Julio Teheran, who is kind of the stalwart here. But I think this team could be better than a lot of the experts are predicting them to be.
Well, I think it's interesting, and you mentioned the patchwork job of the pitching staff that you have with three veterans coming in. The reason, to me, this season is almost a wash, but in a positive way. It doesn't have any real effect on what I think this team could be in a few years, because I think there's so many young players in the minors, and like you mentioned, Dansby Swanson in the core with Freddie Freeman and Julio Teheran, that you feel good about the direction of this franchise, similar to Georgia football. But this season specifically, I wouldn't be shocked if they made the playoffs, and I also wouldn't be shocked if they won 50 games. I'd be more shocked if they only won 50 games and if they made the playoffs, but it doesn't really affect what I think this franchise is going to be long-term because of the investment in the veteran starters for this year. But I also think the team did a great job of not putting too much stock in these players, where they gave them one-year contracts and said, look, we're hoping that you can pitch for us for a year, do a good job, and then by the time next year rolls around, some of these young players and the minors are ready to make the move to the majors. And then you feel like the Braves, you know, the new-look Braves will really be there for good. But they also did a good job bringing in some new faces as they move into SunTrust Park, where you feel like you're excited about going to a Braves game. I know you mentioned you already bought season tickets, or not season tickets, but tickets for some of the bobblehead nights, and that's an attraction. Seeing Bartolo Colon or R.A. Dickey, that in and of itself is exciting. So when you're moving into a new ballpark for a team that's in a transitional phase on the field as well, you had to have something for fans to be excited about.
Oh, yeah. I just don't understand why they did bobblehead games on Friday nights. I mean, it's easier for me to get over there on Friday nights as opposed to during the week, just because of the amount of time it's going to take to get over there with the traffic. But it's just kind of weird. Usually they save those kind of events or giveaways for weekday games. But, hey, I'll take it. And, yeah, definitely looking forward to getting over there some. And, obviously, we'll be over there with Georgia baseball on that that April 8th game against Missouri. So other than the A-list only crowd that'll be there for the Yankees game with the Braves in the that exhibition game, Georgia baseball is opening SunTrust Park to the public, which is pretty neat.
That's awesome. And you get to be a part of it, which is the coolest part for you, is that you'll be in the booth doing the PA. And it's exciting. We talked about this a little bit last week on the show when I was with you. The future of these Georgia sports teams, you feel like it's at a pretty good point, and it's exciting. And look, this weekend, your team, the Atlanta United, will start off their inaugural season at Bobby Dodd. And a lot of people are getting behind them, and you feel it seems like there's a buzz about this team for a sport that's not talked about as much in these parts.
Yeah, especially with the fact that they've already sold 30,000 plus season tickets. They've broken the record for an expansion team for season ticket sales. And they've also sold 50,000 plus tickets to this game coming up on Sunday night at 7:30. So Bobby Dodd Stadium, for once, other than when Georgia goes over there and plays football, will actually be full.
Exactly.
Yes.
And you'll be there in full force, right? I mean, you're.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll be there. I'll be there definitely just working out some of the kinks with some of my guys on some, let's just call it, other projects that I work on. Yes, we'll be there in full force. So, you know, if you follow me on Twitter at SamJFranco, you can keep up with all that. But obviously very excited about Atlanta United and the start to their season coming up. I'm actually getting ready here to chat once again with a friend of 960 The Ref, Alexi Lalas, right when Ryan and I get done doing this. So, again, you'll be able to find that. Just, again, follow me at SamJFranco for all of that information. But definitely looking forward to Atlanta United. But back to the Braves here just for a second, where I think that when you look at this team, they are going to be very young. They're going to have their struggles, but I just don't see why they can't be competitive. And I think I saw 71.5 or 72 was the over-under set in Vegas. I mean, I could see this team hovering around 500 or maybe even better. And, you know, getting to a wild card spot, you know, around 90 wins could be something that gets you there. And, hey, what if this team is competing for the division possibly or competing for that wild card spot going into the trade deadline? This team has a lot of young pieces and not necessarily ones at the top of their prospect rankings, but maybe some towards the middle or the bottom. Maybe you have some expendable pieces that if you feel like you could make a run at something this year, not necessarily, you know, I'm not talking about the World Series, but, you know, a playoff spot or something, and you do something that could possibly make you better. John Coppola has proven that he's not scared to make any deal.
No, not at all. And I think, and also on the flip side, I think it also leads you to, if you're having a good season and Bartolo Colon is pitching out of his mind, maybe you get a couple players who are on the rise in another team's farm system to where you kind of continue to stockpile players because you feel like, is your team going to make a real run at, you know, a World Series? Probably not. But somebody else might need Bartolo Colon. Bartolo Colon might be desperate enough to give you something really big in return.
Yeah, and that's the thing. These pitchers that they have, it's the flip side, like you said. If they're not competitive, they do have those pieces that could get you some pieces coming back. And Baseball America has the Braves right now ranked as the number one organization for the future, and that totally makes sense because they do have all these young pieces, and they've kind of gone back to more of a high-risk, high-reward prospect model where they're trying to get these players that have high potential that could be boom or bust, but we've seen with the Braves over the years, if they're boom, it'll really work out. I mean, this is a team that had John Smoltz, Greg Maddux, and Tom Glavine in the same rotation for a reason. It's because they went after things, and they seem to have gotten back to that risk-taking type model, and it seems like, at least according to a lot of the rankings of them in their system and in the way that they've built this team so far and have these assets in their farm system, that a lot of the outside perspective on them is this team's going to be really good here in the next few years.
Yeah, and you mentioned Capuela and how he's aggressive. Whenever he feels like there's a move to be made, he does it. And since him and John Hart have taken over, you don't really feel that any of the moves they've made, you look back and are really head-scratching. All of them seem to have made sense and so far have seemed to pan out. I mean, even the Hector Olivera deal, which looked terrible at one point, then they end up flipping him to get Matt Kemp. And so every move that seems to need to be made for this team is made. And there's some risky moves that are made, but they've seemed to work out. So like you said, this team should be good for years to come, and you're excited about this team and the way they don't settle for anything. You know, from a management perspective, it's we're going to try to get the best players and the best young talent, and every player's not going to pan out, but we're going to have enough guys in our farm system where even if three or four don't pan out, we have three or four behind them that could be even better.
All right, Ryan, we do it every week. What are your parting shots for our listeners this week, if you got any?
My parting shots. Have a little faith in Georgia basketball. Big week. Obviously, by tomorrow, we'll know if they beat Auburn or not. And then this weekend against Arkansas, and you never know what could happen next week in the SEC tournament. And Sam, to you, I wish you a wonderful opening day with the Atlanta United. I know you've been excited about this for a long time, so I'm excited for you that the day is finally here, or almost here.
Well, the team was born on April 16th, 2014, which just so happens to be my birthday. So the city of Atlanta and Arthur Blank gave me a very awesome birthday gift back in 2014, announcing the team was going to be formed. And it seems like it's taken forever since then, but coming up Sunday, Atlanta will have a professional soccer team playing in the city. So I'm very, very much looking forward to that. For Ryan, I think it's excitement by proxy. Is that right?
Yes, exactly.
And that'll do it for this edition of the Ref Recap Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Check us out every week, and we'll be back next week with another exciting episode. So keep it locked right here on 960theref.com.